Welcome to Minute 56 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy Planes, Trains, and Automobiles one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is DJ Valentine of Simplistic Review. Welcome to the show, DJ.
It is a pleasure being on to talk about one of my favorite movies of all time, the best, I don't care what anybody says, Thanksgiving movie of all time, and three-fourths of the best scene in this movie of all time. So yes, I'm happy to be here.
And it's also the best movie starring PTA, right?
Yes. The great Paul Thomas Anderson's classic.
Exactly.
Nobody's going to get that joke. We got to explain this.
You want to explain it? You can explain it.
I was told we booked this show a year ago. I can't remember
when. We booked the show about 6 months ago. We talked about it. It was Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. And when I contacted DJ about a month ago, I said, "So when do you want to record PTA?" And he wrote me back and says, "Well, I don't know anything about Paul Thomas Anderson." So
because he's doing hip lingo. Okay, I'm old. I gotta get like spelled out to me. And when you said that, my co-host, who's a humongous Paul Thomas Anderson fan, and I have forgotten all about the Planchers, I'm like, why? What? did he mistake me for my co-host? Because I don't know if I could fill up a show talking about Paul Thomas Anderson other than go watch his stuff.
Exactly. So
like, he goes, no, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I was like, okay, I got it.
So that you can fill a show up with, right?
My senility kind of got the better of me there.
Right. But yeah. So you can fill up a show talking about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles then, right?
Maybe. Okay. We shall find out.
We're stuck all week in a car. So, you know, I don't think we get out of the car at all this week. At least not on screen. In the script we do, but on screen we don't. So, minute 56 begins with Dell stating the obvious, at least according to him. And goes all the way till Neil turns over as Dell does the mess around. So last week we ended the show on Friday with Neil getting into the car seat and realizing that Dell had actually broken it by playing around with all the mechanisms. Now, right. I mean, one of my favorite trivia aspects of this particular scene, which ended or is continuing now. This is one of the two scenes that sold Steve Martin on this movie. You know, he read the script and he said, okay, I'm going to do it because of the marathon scene, which we discussed in very deep detail 2 weeks ago, and this scene. So, you know, it's a great scene. And so they continue their argument here. Basically, Dell is driving and he doesn't understand why Neil believes that he broke the car seat. Even though Neil
he's not paying attention to what's going on. Look at me.
Well, that's Dell. Maybe Dell likes to sit in the car seat that way. I don't know. I mean, one of the questions that we brought up last week when Mark was on is that, okay, well, what did Dell do in all the other places that he was sitting? You know, he complained last week that he had a bad back. But when he was on the plane, he didn't complain of a bad back. When he was in the airport, when he was on the train, when he was on the bus, you know, he's been in so many different situations. And also when he was in the driver's seat, he didn't complain either. It's only when he's sitting leisurely in the passenger seat is when he starts complaining that he has a bad back. Because it's not as if Neil got into the driver's seat and that seat also was flat on his back, you know, because of the way that Dell had to play around with it or anything like that. I mean, it's a great gag, and it works very well here. There's no question about it, especially that it's John Candy. Come on.
Yeah, of course. I mean, John Candy, I mean, you guys have broken him down probably, but it's just he's so genuine, even with the most absurd stuff.
Completely. It's
like, I guess I believe that he believes this.
Exactly. You hit it right on the nose. There's no question about it. We've said this so many times. A lot of the lines that Dell delivers, he delivers them in such a genuine and, I guess you'd sort of say, naive way that we really believe that he believes what he's saying and that he's doing it with a good heart. He's not trying to be mean about that.
Right. And I mean, spoiler to the ending, he's lying the whole time. that's the greatest thing about him. You believe him. I think he might believe him, but he's just lying the whole time.
But that's the thing, he's lying to himself.
Right.
He's
Right.
creating this fantasy world around himself. I mean, there's something that we discussed a little bit last week, that in the script there's a point where he mentions that he has two kids, and that was cut out of the movie, and that changes the whole dynamics. You know, when
Right.
you know what happens at the end of this movie, you think he's this lonely guy with nothing around him, but if he does have two kids, so it adds a little bit to it. It means that he's not completely alone. So
Right.
I guess they decided just to cut those lines out because, you know, they didn't really need them. So basically, Neil in the last minute said, "You broke the car seat." And he goes, "How can you break a car seat? It's impossible." And then Neil says to him, "What do you mean it's impossible?" And then Dell genuinely says, "Well, do you want to drive?"
Why doesn't he say yes there? It's because he's tired, I
I
guess.
think it's because he's
Besides,
tired, but again, I mean, we established that they have a 4-hour drive. It's not that big of a deal.
right.
You know, it's this 4-hour drive is taking them a lot longer than 4 hours. There's no question about that. And maybe it's because, you know, they had to wait for Dell to get comfortable in the driver's seat. I don't know. I mean, he and then he goes, "No." And he asks him if he wants to drive, and he goes, "No, I don't." And then he says, "Why did you do this?" Now, what type of question is that? Why did you do this?
He's lashing out. He's just
It's not like
lashing
I
out at
know, but it's not like he did it on purpose. It's something that just happened. I mean, yes, he was playing around with it. You know, it's the whole idea that you tell kids, you know, don't play around with something that's going to break. But that's what Dell did. He played around with it and he broke it. Even though it's theoretically a new, relatively new car. You know,
When
you'd think, you'd
I
think.
watch the scene, I always think that why doesn't he just go in the back seat? Just I would just crawl to the back seat. I mean, though I'm 6'2", so it probably would suck for me comfortable wise, but I'm not gonna sit in a weird position like that. But yeah, it's
Right. I
all for
mean,
comedic effect.
once again, have you never sat in a car where you've tried to put the seat back as far as possible to get almost in a reclining position to try and sleep if there's no one behind you?
I'm
No.
gonna save what my that response to a beaten path the stuff because
Okay. All
I have
right.
a
No
same
problem.
problem.
All right. All right.
I have a
We'll
same
get there. We'll get there. Sorry for jumping ahead on that,
spoiler
but
alert.
I'm glad.
Jeez, come
Exactly.
on.
You've no, but what's great is you're giving people a tease. You know, stick around, stick around. DJ's got stories about car seats. And there you go.
The greatest tease of all time.
There you go. And then, you know, Neil is sitting in this seat, and the seat, like, we don't see that he's playing around with the seat. His hands are both in the air, and the seat just like starts rising. It's as if he's like praying the way that his hands are. You know, and it just smashes him against the windshield. It's like
Which is hilarious because there is no seat designed where that would be like, yes, I want my the seat to go up enough so my face can lay against the windshield. That would be a cutoff, I think, on the motorized seat thing.
And I mean it's great acting by Steve Martin here. Because, you know, as the seat is moving on its own in some mysterious way, you know, he's like he looks around to try and figure out, okay, who's moving my seat? And then his face just smashes up against the windshield. And what's funny is that Dell doesn't even react to this. It's just, okay, that's normal.
He doesn't want to be wrong, I guess. I guess? I don't know. He's oblivious to Steve's
No, but
pain
he did.
or
If I was sitting there, and even if I didn't believe it, I would be looking in shock that something like that happened, you know. And then Dell's response is, "Well, look, I'm not going to be held responsible for faulty engineering."
the engineering, great line. Fantastic. What do you go? You can't attack him after that. It's like I didn't make the car.
Yeah, and Neil is still pasted against the windshield and goes, "Oh boy, this is comfortable. This is really comfortable." And then the seat goes back, you know, automatically again. He doesn't have to. It's like he's using the force to move the seat. And, there it is. Dell is a Jedi.
This makes this movie completely different if you do
That's
that.
right.
Completely.
Dell is a Jedi who's just trying to stop Neil from complaining, so he's moving the seat. There you go.
They do lead a lonely solitude life, the Jedi. So maybe he's like the Obi-Wan Kenobi of this film. He's just he's trying to just help somebody else on the path of the Force. This is the last place I thought this show would go to Star Wars.
Well, that's what's fun about doing these things minute by minute. You can go anywhere. It's not planned.
Even a galaxy far, far away.
There you go. That's right. Take Neil and Del to a galaxy far, far away. And then the seat goes all the way back again. And Neil he's somewhat happy that, okay, that I'm not going anywhere else here. And then the response is, okay, I don't want to argue. All right, let's not fight. All right, all right. And then Neil says, then I'm going to go to sleep. All right. And then he reaches behind him and takes the jacket from the back seat. See, he couldn't lie down in the back seat because he had the jacket there. That he would have crinkled his jacket if he would have lied down on it. And then he uses it as a blanket, And then he says to Del, all right, I'm putting my wallet in the glove compartment. Don't let me forget it. Which, in general, is a smart move. I mean,
is it a smart move? Why is your pocket is your wallet that big where it's uncomfortable in your pocket?
Well, he's got no money. So it can't be that.
So why are you taking that? That's not when he says it. Every time I watch the movie, like in your mind, you're like try and hope this time you watch it, it'll be different. But it's not. So you watch, it's like, no. Why would you? That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard. To put my wallet in the glove box, I have never had the inclination to do that. But when it sets up everything, a lot of this segment we have are just breadcrumbs to pay off payoff jokes. Right, which are fantastic.
Which is why it's such a great script, especially after the fact that they cut it down so much and this stuff still stays there and helps.
Right.
No question about the fact that John Hughes was a genius and knew how to write a script really, really well. And to, like you said, put those breadcrumbs around and, you have Chekhov's gun, so here we have Chekhov's wallet.
Chekhov's wallet. Chekhov's cigarette, Chekhov's wallet, Chekhov's parka.
Exactly. Just a whole bunch of Chekhov stuff.
Chekhov's all over the
place. And you see, then we're going to talk about Star Trek too.
About to say Star Trek. We've crossed. All we need is Battlestar Galactica for the three-peat. That's all we need to get some kind of Cylon.
We have to find a way to get into the Cylon. You're right. There you go. Pavel Chekhov. There you go.
Pavel Chekhov.
So he puts it in the glove compartment. Now, what do you know about a glove compartment?
I know if you lock it, you need a warrant for somebody to go inside of it. That's about as much as I know about a glove box. And that's the only thing I keep in my glove box is my registration and the lock for my tire, and that's it. I think I've opened my glove box in my car maybe 5 times since I've had my car.
Oh,
my tire. It's like a part of the house that you never go to. It's just like I don't ever go in a glove box. I go to a trunk more than I go to a glove box. Glove box is just a mystery. I don't wear gloves. I'm from Florida. I don't have a need for a glove box other than to make sure that the proper paperwork is right next to me. That's it.
Okay. Well, you
armrest.
I
use the armrest more in the glove box.
Ah, there you go. Well, of course, you can put your arm on it.
No, I even open it up. I have like the stuff that I like,
you're talking about in the middle. You're talking about the armrest in the middle.
The glove box is just, it's just a thing. I don't ever touch it. It's there. It's there. It's in every car. You just never, ever mess with it. Or at least I never mess with it.
Right. Well, I was going to ask you what you have in your glove compartment. So that you jumped, you knew that question. No, you knew the question beforehand. That's great. Maybe you're a Jedi too.
I am a Jedi too. I sense a disturbance in the glove box. I knew that was coming.
That's great. So what I keep in my glove compartment is actually I have like tissues in there and, I have obviously the insurance stuff. I have a car repair book and stuff like that. And I also have a Coca-Cola glass in there, right? Because I'll explain why. When I go to the movies, I can't drink out of the paper Coke cups that they give you. I have a spare, Coca-Cola glass that I keep in my glove compartment. So when I'm at the movie theaters, I take it out And, you know, I usually will bring a bottle of Coke in with me because, again, I don't like the watered down stuff that they give us in the
Right.
theater itself.
Right.
And so, you know, I have my own glass, and because there's nothing like drinking Coke from a glass. It's not the
No,
same
that's awesome.
as drinking from the paper stuff. So that's basically what I use my glove compartment for. I keep a glass in there. You know, like come home from the movie, I wash out the glass, I let it dry off, and then the following morning I put it back in the glove compartment till the next time I go to the movies. You know,
That is a interesting thing.
even during COVID,
Even
where
during
no, I'm
COVID,
saying even
wow.
during COVID when I didn't go to the movies as much, so I would still drive around with the glass.
If you would have given me 7,000 guesses, the last guess, I probably wouldn't guess Coca-Cola glass in my glove box. It could have been an animal. You could have said a gerbil, anything. What do you call it? A pair of plier, anything. Glass. That's interesting. I mean, I help manage a movie theater, so I completely understand the I don't want the watered down soda stuff. But man, they let you get in. So you must be doing a little infiltration with
I
it. You
just
sneak it in there.
I put it in my pocket.
Okay. All
Wait,
right. All
you're
right.
talking about taking the bottle, the bottle of Coke in, or taking the glass?
Either one. I
Okay,
mean, usually
well,
we don't let you.
I live in Israel, and there's actually a law here. They passed a law called the popcorn law.
Okay.
I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago, which means that anything that they sell in the movie theater, you're allowed to bring in on your own also. They can't stop you.
Really?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
We're like militant about that at Arthur. You can't bring the only thing that we let you come in with is if it's water or something. If it's anything else, if their bag is bigger than like a certain thing, we don't let you anywhere near. You're telling me if the movie theater starts selling pizza, I can come in there with a pizza?
Well, theoretically, yes, but I mean, I still I've gone to movie theaters with hamburgers in my pocket. You know,
Oh,
I
really?
yeah,
Awesome.
I you know when I go to the movies, I want to enjoy myself. You know, so I have a hamburger that or you know chicken nuggets or something like that. I what I usually do is I have my laptop in a bag, and you know I just put it under the laptop, and they don't check that far. You know, I once got caught, and they forced me to eat the hamburger as I was waiting to go to the movie theater.
You had to shove it down.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
It's a challenge at
I was
that
really pissed because I said to them, I said,
point.
here, just hold on to it for me and I'll eat it when I get out of the movie theater in 2 hours.
They
And
can't be held responsible for holding on to your food,
and
okay?
that
They
and
don't
that's what
want
they said. They said, we
to. Yeah,
can't
you
take
can't do
it.
that.
They said either eat it now or throw it away. I'm like, oh crap.
Right. As somebody who's kicked many people out of the movie theaters, we would have had an interesting conversation about you walking in with a hamburger. Where'd you get this hamburger from? Is it medium rare? Is there bacon on there? Is it kind of cheesy? What
I
kind of cheese
don't.
do you have on
All
there?
right. Well, I keep kosher, so no bacon, no cheese. Don't worry about
Oh, okay. All right. All
that.
right. All right. All right. That's interesting. Do you put any kind of condiments on your hamburger? Do you put like ketchup, mayo, mustard, anything like
Ketchup
that?
and mayo. That's what I got on there. That's
No,
what I
no
like on it.
mustard. You don't like a little tangy little thing on there.
No,
Okay.
don't have mustard on them. I mean, I like mustard and some of this, but you know what? I think in the fast food restaurants here in Israel, they don't offer mustard. I mean,
Really?
I have like, you know, a container of mustard at home that I use,
What
but
I do is I
no.
take the ketchup and I take the mayo and I put it in a bowl and I mix it together and then I got a kind of like a hamburger spread. That's what I usually do.
Yeah, okay.
You
Well,
don't
I
do
do
that.
that. They put it together. When you put it on the hamburger, you put it together, obviously. You know, it's not one on one side, one on the other side, you know, that type of thing.
My sister was like does not like she puts barbecue sauce on her hamburger. She does not like ketchup at all. What she likes barbecue sauce. It was weird. I don't understand that. She dips her fries in barbecue sauce. I think she's just a barbecue sauce fanatic. I think that's what it is.
Right. No, I like it with mayo, you know, and I think I was even doing it before, you know, we had the whole Pulp Fiction idea of talking about,
Royale with
you know,
cheese and mayo.
Royale with cheese and mayo. There you go.
How do we get the hamburgers? Oh, I'm sorry. You
No, that's
infiltrated the
fine.
movie theater with
That's
hamburgers.
right. That's right. Because we're talking about the glove compartment. Do you know why it's called a glove compartment?
I'm assuming to put gloves in. That'd be my first bet.
Okay, now why would someone need gloves when they're driving?
There's driving gloves. What movie was that where the guy had gloves just specifically for driving? I would assume. I
Right.
cannot
Most
remember.
movies, yeah, the killer has to have gloves,
The killer has the gloves.
but he doesn't keep them in the glove compartment, you know, usually. No, so back when they first started, you know, with making cars in the early 1900s, So it was more open and it was colder. So people had to wear gloves. And so when they made the cars, they decided to have what was known as a glove box, a place that you can keep all of your gloves. Now, some of them, as you said, some of them have locks on them,
Right.
which is helpful if you have to take your car to, valet service, or if you have a convertible, or sometimes, there are cars, I don't think they still have them this way, where you have the button to open the trunk there. So I remember as a kid that my parents had one that locked, but I don't really think you need it.
I have mine locked. I think I'm thinking of the antagonist in Back to School. He had one of those olden like cars. Maybe it was a Rolls Royce, but it was open, but he only had gloves for driving. And that's when I was like, oh, then maybe that's where they, but you're taking it way back. So that makes complete sense to me. So, and they're coming like right off of horses anyway. So like a couple of decades away from a horse,
That's
a
right.
whole
Now,
horse-drawn carriage.
what do you think they call a glove compartment or glove box in Minnesota or in Wyoming? In southern Minnesota and northwest Wyoming, they have a different name for it.
Wow, that's a good question. Is probably not going to be the answer. I don't know. What would they
Okay,
call
they
that?
call it a cubby or a cubby hole. All right. And
Course.
what is it called in Idaho or in some other Rocky Mountain states?
Idaho, I'd say something potato related. Rocky Mountain States, a compartment?
They call it a jockey box. Again, I have no idea why. It's just,
Why? I need the answers to these questions.
yeah.
You can't just drop cubby on me and say, I don't know.
They don't explain why. They just say it's referred to as a cubby hole.
I need to find these people. You need to explain your work. Show your work on this.
This isn't math. All
Show your work. I want to know why you divided the five. Okay, just tell me why.
right, I'll try to find the answer for you. If you're really interested, I'll try
Maybe they're Cubs fans. We
to
don't know.
find
We're just gonna.
it. Right. Now, what is something that they used to have in glove compartments that they no longer have?
Gas tank
That
or
would
a
be
gas
really silly.
part. I'm trying to,
Yeah,
you hit
because
me with cubby hole, so I'm trying to.
if you spill a little bit, that's not going to be very good.
Hey, he was trying to figure it out. Ford was trying to figure it out the car. He did trial and error, you know.
They didn't want people to be able to have access to the gas tank. There you
Yes.
go.
There you go. No, during this gas shortage we're going through, right? Kind of still right now. it's that would be very pertinent to have some kind of locking mechanism on your gas thing.
Yeah. So the answer to that question is a light. They used to have lights in them, and the car company decided that they're gonna cut costs, and they're no longer gonna put those in there.
Lights? What? Why?
Why would you have a light? Well, the same reason you have a light, in the refrigerator. I don't know.
I guess because unlike me, they people putting a whole bunch of stuff in there and they want to be able to check, see what it is, I guess. But yeah, that's weird. I'm still confounded by cubby hole. What was the one for Idaho? It was called a
A
jockey box.
jockey box. I mean, I just looked up why it's called what a cubby hole is, and it basically says that a cubby hole is another word for glove compartment. That's the response.
Thanks, etymology
Thank you.
experts.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Wikipedia lyric that said, I don't know. I guess.
I love the way that, it refers you back to each of them.
See cubbyhole. See jockey box.
Exactly. It's like, okay, what's the answer to A? C B. What's the answer to
CB.
B? D
Again, show your work. It goes back to math right there.
Okay, so a jockey box is an insulated container containing ice or water, as well as a long coil of hollow tubing. It's used to cool beverages being served on tap in temporary locations.
See, that's a good thing that if your glove box was almost like a cooler, that'd be awesome. But then you could put your glass in
They
there.
actually have those. That's the next
Oh,
thing I was going to say. They have, there are new
hey.
cars that are temperature controlled that you can use them as a cooler for beverages. An example they give here is the Dodge Caliber. And there are even cars that have multiple compartments so that you can heat stuff up and you can cool stuff off and you can keep it at room temperature. And I mean, that's just crazy. You know, it's like a George
Costanza. Why would you have to leave your car? I just sleep in my car.
It's a George Costanza, you know, or Barca Lounge, you know.
Barca Lounge. The Costanza.
Right.
The new Chevy Costanza.
that would work. All right, so we'll stop with the glove compartment stuff for now. Now, when Neil opens the glove compartment, you can see what's in their glove compartment. So you have the car manual, which says 1986 on it, and there's an opened pen, which is really strange. It's a pen without a cap.
All right. You know, that's going to explode in the heat, but all right.
Well, they don't know yet that it's going to get heat.
I'm thinking of the temperature of the car. I'm from Florida, so when I see pen, and if you keep a pen in your car in Florida, by the time you get back to your car, it's going to be all over your seats anywhere. Yeah, it's going to be like 100 degrees in your car, unless you have you're parking in a parking garage. But if you're out to the elements, it's just like 91 degrees outside. Your car is essentially an oven, so you eat pens around.
Right.
It's not a good idea.
and then what I noticed at this point was that, you know, neither of them is wearing a seatbelt.
No. I did notice that, especially later on in the scene where he's reaching back. And so I was like, oh, yeah, you're not. But this wasn't – when was this law? When was the –
Okay. We're going to get there.
All right. So seatbelts, blah. That was like, who you wear seatbelts? 1986.
Right. So I mean, seatbelts are used to reduce the likelihood of death or serious injury in a traffic accident because it reduces the force of secondary impacts with interior strike hazards by keeping occupants positioned correctly for maximum effectiveness of the airbag. And by preventing occupants being ejected from the vehicle in a crash or if the vehicle rolls over. Okay. Those are important things to know. And, you know, basically to keep them from flying through the windshield. That's more or less what it is. Now, the whole question is, you know, at what point did they start putting seatbelts into cars? So basically they started putting them in pretty early in 1946. There was a doctor, a neurologist, who in Pasadena, California, whose name was Dr. C. Hunter Sheldon, and he decided to give money to the automobile industry and try to no sorry he made it. It says he made a major contribution, so I thought that was money. No, he gave them the idea. Oops. He gave them the idea to start using retractable seatbelts because they beforehand they just had normal seatbelts that you know were very uncomfortable. Not that seatbelts are more comfortable, but you know there's a reason for them. And the reason he did this was because he saw so many people coming in with head injuries in the emergency room that when he did a little bit of research, he realized that it was because of the primitive design of the early seatbelts that caused all of these injuries and deaths.
Right.
So he convinced one of the car manufacturers called Nash to install in 1949 40,000 cars with seatbelts. And most people who bought cars did not want them. They basically sent it back. They said, I don't want it. This is just too uncomfortable.
To this day, people still fight over the seatbelt thing, even with proven evidence how valuable it is.
Yeah. They said that the most people met it with insurmountable sales resistance.
Insurmountable? Oh, my God.
And after 1 year, they had only sold 1,000 of those 40,000 cars. And then slowly but surely, other car companies started adding them in the 50s and everything. In 1966, Congress passed the National Traffic and Motor Vehicle Safety Act, which required all automobiles to actually have seatbelts, but they didn't force people to actually wear the seatbelts.
There's an analogy that can be made from what you're selling right now, from back then, to what's going on kind of still right now.
Yeah.
Because it's essentially you're saying that there was this thing invented that makes you safe, or at least safer, and people are hesitant to have it. And they pass a government bill, and people are resistant. It sounds very similar to a certain situation that has been going around for the last 3 years.
Yeah, could be. So. Now, what's very funny is that what I read here was is that the fact that there are places that have mandatory seatbelt laws, they have little or no effect on the overall number of traffic fatalities, because seatbelt usage also disincentivizes safe driving behaviors, thereby increasing the total number of accidents. You know, hey, I'm wearing a seatbelt.
I can just drive 1,000 miles an hour. Screw it. Drive up this cliff.
That's right. I'm wearing a seatbelt. That should be fine.
They told me it was supposed to save me.
It did save me, but I still got into an accident and killed 10 other people in the car across from me. So right. In America, they started mandatory seatbelt laws in the early 1980s, and people were very much against it. And there were even people who took the government to court to be able to challenge these laws. And there were people who would cut seatbelts out of their cars to make sure that they wouldn't. You know, people are just crazy.
Yeah. This all sounds very, very familiar to me. It's very, very familiar. Life, history, you're doomed to repeat it if you don't.
Exactly. You're deemed if you have to learn from the past, or you're deemed to repeat the failures of history, present, yeah. Or something like that. I don't know the exact quote, but yeah, more or less that's what it comes down to. Then we get a shot of the car driving on the road. And we see Neil is just lying down sleeping, and we see Del. You know, it's a great view from the front of the car. I mean, obviously, it's done on a soundstage. You know, it's not them really driving. So, but the view that we get here is great. So we see Del, you know, driving, and you have a pack of cigarettes in front of him on the dashboard, which last week it was on the other side in front of him when he was when he was sitting in the passenger seat, and there's still a wrapper. There was a wrapper of, it could be some sort of maybe potato chips or pretzels or something, that's still sitting there on the side. You know, meaning that when they stopped to switch drivers, in the script, they stopped in a bar. So no one thought to throw that away. It's still there.
It's a rent-a-car. Come on.
Yeah. No, but you'd think that Neil would be more, you know.
Anal retentive.
Anal retentive. Like, you know, there you go. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah. So it's just funny to see that. And you see that Del is now smoking a cigarette. He's got a cigarette in his hand. And we hear music from the song Mess Around. And we'll talk more about it tomorrow, because tomorrow is an entire Mess Around eccentric episode. So we'll leave a little bit of that to talk about tomorrow. But I love how he starts tapping the wheel. He's tapping the steering wheel, pretending to be playing and stuff like that. And then, you know, he takes the cigarette and, you know, drops a little bit of ash outside of the crack through the window. You know, he's singing along and stuff like that. And then, you know, this somewhat bothers Neil a little bit. And you see that he just, like, turns over and faces away from Del, which works really well for the rest of this whole scene that we're going to be dealing with over the next few days, where Neil is just not paying attention to what's going on. Yeah, he's just.
I do like him when he's running mimicking the piano playing on the dashboard. I love that part.
Yeah,
that's
awesome. Yeah, we'll talk more about that tomorrow, because we get into that a lot more tomorrow. We're talking about that. So, I mean, that's how this minute ends. Is there anything in particular that you wanted to discuss about this minute that we didn't get to? Besides Jedi's and Trekkies and
Jedi's and Trekkies and glove boxes.
Oh my.
What kind of car is this? You've discussed what kind of car this is.
Yes, we did.
They're driving.
It is it's first of all, it's a fake car. It's made.
Oh, it's not a real car. Oh,
it's made of two different cars put together, but it's in, I think it's an Oldsmobile. Now I have to go back and look in my notes to see what I said last week. But
the front looks like a Dodge Aries, but I guess because my friend used to have a
Chrysler LeBaron Town and Country.
Oh, okay.
But what's funny is they call it here something very different. They call it a they created a new name for it in this movie because it's not the same thing.
Did the company not want to be associated with what happens to this car later on in the film? Is
Couldn't
that
understand why they would want that, but yeah.
what happened?
No one wanted to be associated with this movie. No airlines, no car companies, nothing.
Wonder if they would do, if this movie came out today, would they want that? I would assume yes would be the answer.
Probably. So it was called it, they called it on the car itself, it says it's a farm and country instead of town and country.
Farm and country.
It's a Grand Detroit Farm and Country Turbo. That's the name of the car.
Farm and country.
Instead of town and country, they need to change things a little bit, I guess. Slightly.
Legally, you're covered.
Yeah,
You're covered legally.
exactly. So, I was reading on the Internet Movie Car Database that this is basically an amalgamation of a number of cars. That they took the basic town and country car and then they changed certain things on it to fit with other cars and stuff like that. I'm not enough of a car guy to be able to actually understand or explain those differences. So if anyone's interested, you can go look on the Internet Movie Car Database. It's the IMCDB, where they have all
Yes, it
the
does exist.
yeah.
It is a real
Yeah, it is,
website.
it is, it is. So the script has a few discrepancies, not that many, but basically the when Neil is lurched forward by the car seat, it puts him in a position where his head is to his knees instead of him being up against the windshield. I think it works better that he's up against the windshield.
Right. More of a visual joke than the other thing.
Yeah.
You couldn't get that shot of his face smushed against the glass. That's money right there.
Yeah, and then the two of them have a bit of an argument about music. Del says, Del's driving and he turns on music and he turns on country music and he goes, you like country music? And Neil goes, I detest country music. And he goes, well, I listen to your rock and roll oldies rubbish. I'm not going to argue with you. Put on whatever you like. Just keep it soft. I'd like to get a little sleep. And then he starts playing around, going from station to station. And Neil screams at him and goes, find the goddamn station. And then Del says, I'm sorry, I don't have that worldwide radio network committed to memory. And then he keeps flipping back and forth, and they continue with their argument. And then he turns off the music, and then basically Del goes, forget it. You're such a miserable asshole. I don't want to aggravate you any more than you already are. And he goes, I'm not miserable. Turn on the radio and find your station. He goes, forget it. I'm not in the mood for music anymore. And he goes, fine. He goes, I was, but you ruined it. I guess I better consult with you from now on how you want me to behave so that you'll be comfortable. After all, I only rented the car. You're the almighty passenger. And Neil goes, put on the radio. He goes, forget it. Put it on. I'd rather not. And Neil goes, don't play games, Del. Put on the radio. And then it says, Del doesn't react. Neil leans forward, does a sit-up, and flips on the radio. He scans down the dial until he hears the plaintive howl of a steel guitar and leans back. Del goes, thanks, Neil. He goes, my pleasure. And then they get into an argument about smoking, where Del says, does my smoke bother you? And he goes, not if you crack your window open a bit. And he opens the window, and it starts making a lot of noise. Now, I personally cannot drive if any of the windows are open in my car because it
Really?
just annoys me so much, the whistling sound. So I always get angry at my kids when they do that. Even if you open it just a crack, it starts making a whistling sound. So I can understand this type of thing. So Neil goes, not if you crack the window open a little bit. So he cracks it open and it howls. And Del goes, is that too noisy? And then Neil goes, close it more or open it more? And he goes, well, if I close it more, it'll be closed completely. And then he says, all right, I'll just make the heat. I'll just turn the heat up in the car. And then Del goes, get a little shut eye so you'll be fresh for your shift. Now, it's funny that he actually says that because, again, this is a 4-hour drive.
Right.
You don't have to take that many shifts in order to get across
Yeah, that's nothing. that's yeah. You're gonna get a nap if anything. You're
exactly. Gonna... I don't know. And the whole mess around is not in the script at all. That's something that they added in later on. So every Monday we do a segment called Martin Monday, where my guest gives their top five performances of Steve Martin. So DJ, you want to give us your top five performances, starting from five, work your way up to one.
My number five is going to be The Three Amigos. This is like the heat of comedic movies, in which you have like three great comedians in one movie. You got Martin Short, Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, remaking The Magnificent Seven/Seven Samurai with comedy. I think I was taken to see this movie by my cousins, and I didn't want to see it. I wanted to see I forget which other movie was coming out at the time. It was probably something sci-fi or something. And I just remember leaving going, that was a good decision. I'm glad I went and watched that movie, because I laughed throughout the entire thing. My number four is My Blue Heaven. My Blue Heaven is Steve Martin being doing a lot of stereotypical, you know, Italian mobster stuff. And I like the whole thing where they say this is kind of like a comedic sequel to Goodfellas. But it's just the chemistry he has with Rick Moranis.
It's a comedic sequel to Goodfellas that came out 2 years later.
It came out before, yeah.
Right,
everybody like watches it and they're like, it's like the same plot. Like Ray Liotta's character moves to whatchamacallit, San Diego, and because whatever. But yeah, it's just him and Joan Cusack in their scenes, or him and Steve Martin, the merengue scene, the ridiculous ending. It's just, for some reason, it's like a guilty pleasure of mine. Number three, The Jerk. I was born a poor black child, maybe the greatest opening line to a movie ever of all time. I don't think it's debatable. It's absurd, but this is kind of like when Steve Martin was at like the height of his comedic
craziness.
Powers. Yeah.
Wild and crazy guy.
Wild and crazy guy Steve Martin is in that movie. Number two, it's Roxanne. The remake of Cyrano. I love this film. A lot of people don't really even remember this movie.
I love Roxanne.
I learned so much from this movie. The bar scene being my favorite part, when he lists off all the insults about himself to be a jerk. It totally,
even though he doesn't know how to count.
Doesn't know how to count, exactly. He like loses the what number am I on? That scene is just,
you're on three. Scene, you have another 17 to go. You know,
it's like. It's so good. But that scene in probably Conan O'Brien kind of taught me how powerfully disarming self-deprecation is. So much so, like, if you ever listen to an episode of the show that I helped make, I have an announcer who literally insults everything about the show and every intro and outro. Because if anybody doesn't like the show, whatever insults they can throw at us are going to be less good than the insults the announcer makes. I kind of learned that from Roxanne, where the guy wants to insult him. He goes, no, that's a horrible insult. Let me show you what a real good insult is. That's a good insult. So, yeah, that's my number two. And number one has got to be, it's still Planes, Trains. It's Planes, Trains. Come on.
Yes. Yeah.
It's seminal. Come on. What are you talking about?
All right. Great. Thank you very much for that. So every day we have another segment called Off the Beaten Track, where either myself or my guests give a little anecdote story of something that happened to us along the journey of life. So, DJ, you got one for us?
Okay. 1997. I'm driving home. I live in Florida. I was going to Florida State University. My best friend, Jay Plummer, he remembers this story too. He was going to FAM, their kind of neighboring colleges. And we're going to drive home for a spring break or break or whatever. It was some kind of break. And we were going to leave at night, and we were supposedly going to sleep and then go. But we did everything but sleep. We were hanging around the mall, our friends. We did everything but sleep. And we get on the road about 2 a.m., and we are exhausted. And I was driving, and my friend Jay was in the passenger seat. And to this day, we bring up the story every time we see each other. And I remember driving, and it's pitch black outside. And then I remember waking up in the passenger seat in broad daylight, and then looking over and seeing Jay driving, but asleep. And then me yelling, and then him yelling, and then pulling over. And we're screaming. And we don't remember either one of us, because our plan was to drive halfway, just like in this, and switch.
How long was the drive?
7 hours. Well, okay. Florida is very, if people haven't been in the Florida, from Tallahassee to Miami, it's about a 7-hour drive if you're taking the cheap long way. There's a turnpike, it's 5 hours, but it's a 7 hour drive. And we don't remember pulling over and switching, neither one of us to this day. And to this day, we don't drive at night because of this. Because of like
together in general.
When I say drive at night, we don't drive long distances at night. We try, it's like if we're going to drive somewhere, we're going to plan it where we leave in the morning so the sunlight will be on our face.
Oh, wow.
Because it was, you got to understand, imagine you're driving and you wake up in the passenger seat, you look over, and the person that's, you're not where you were, and maybe your friend picked you up, but he's driving the car. And you can see his eyes are closed. So yeah, that every time I see him, I see him maybe three times a year, and we just laugh at each other. Like, we always joke, God must have been driving the car because we don't know how from where I remember being awake to where I where we were when I woke up again. It's a long drive. It's like maybe the 4 hours. It's maybe 4 hours from where I lost consciousness. And apparently he lost consciousness. So maybe we switched seats instinctively. I don't know what happened to this day.
I remember one of my uncles used to say that you can use cruise control and just go to sleep. Yeah.
Apparently it's true because I'm alive to tell the tale.
Exactly. Wow. Wow, that's great. All right, so you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
You can check our show out, the Simplistic Reviews podcast. You can just search Simplistic Reviews on YouTube, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, all that stuff. You can go to simplisticreviews.net, and all our goodies are on there. And you get to hear me and my two cohorts wax poetic about movies and TV, and we do sketches and play games, all that good stuff.
Cool. Sounds like fun. And finding me is very simple. All you do is a quick search for a Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, or you can go to our website. So DJ, you feel like coming back again tomorrow? You want to talk a little bit? You want to mess around a little bit tomorrow?
I'll do a little mess around. I'll smoke a little cigarette, blow it out the window, and play piano on the dashboard. I'll do that.
There's a great teaser. There you go. Come back everyone tomorrow. So, until tomorrow, you're
fucked. You're fucked.
You're fucked.
You're fucked. I'm sorry, I forgot. It caught me off guard. You're fucked. It caught me off guard. I literally forgot you said it was a tagline. I forgot all about it.